Blog Talk Radio.
Keeping your business healthy in today's marketplace can be a challenging and overwhelming task. From the threat of litigation inside and outside your organization and the inefficiencies that can rob your bottom line as a result of unproven marketing programs, the deck can be stacked against you. To get ahead of these challenges and stay ahead of your competition, the Bottled Business Sense Show provides practical business solutions that uniquely emphasize key legal principles, management techniques, and marketing strategies to protect and ensure the longevity of your business. You'll learn how to implement marketing and protection principles equal to those used by today's most successful corporations. Join your host, Bill Bernard, Rick Moscoso, and Steve Smith for some high-energy discussion that will inspire you to take control of your business so it can prosper in today's consistently challenging business environment.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Tuesday at 10 a.m. here on the Bottle Business Sense Show. And welcome, everyone, back to the show. Looking forward to today's topic with Mr. Bill Bernard. He's on the other side here back on the mainland. So before we get into that, we are a simulcast show, as you know, for all our returning viewers. We talk about business topics in regards to marketing and legal aspects of how to protect your business properly, how to effectively market your business so we can go out there and do what we all want to do and set out to make money as long as we're all set up properly. So you can find us on social media, on Google Plus, Facebook, Twitter, at Bottle Business Sense Show. Twitter, we're at BB Sense Show. And if you would like to be a guest on the show or you have any feedback in regards to future topics, please drop us a line at bottledbusinesssenseshow@gmail.com. So with that, we'll jump right into it and welcome on Bill Bernard. He's on the other side there. Welcome back to the mainland, Bill.
Thanks, Rick. Good to be back. Good to be back with our viewers and listeners for what I think is an important topic. I've gotten a lot of questions about this probably over about the last year or so. Because, you know, people tend to call you sometimes when they're in trouble. I mean, that's why they call lawyers and they need to get good advice. And a lot of the calls that you get, believe it or not, are, you know, concern issues of whether or not somebody is going to be in trouble if they decide to move or transfer some of their property, if they know a debt is coming their way, either by way of a lawsuit that they know about, or maybe they have a debt already that they need to pay and they're trying to prevent giving up something of value in order to pay that debt. Now, off the top, that would probably seem to be a little devious. And so consequently, as a result of what does involve a lot of devious schemes by individuals, the California legislature has passed Penal Code Sections 154 and 531, and they deal with fraudulent conveyances. And then, of course, we also have the Uniform Voidable Transactions Act, better known as the UVTA, which also governs voidable transactions. But we're going to principally talk about California, the California Penal Code regulations today, because the Uniform Voidable Transactions Act is a choice of law rule. And otherwise, in other words, it says that you can't do what I'm about to explain to you in today's show, and that if you do it, the law is going to be governed by the jurisdiction where the debtor, the person who owes the money, resides. So since we're going to be talking to a California audience, we're going to talk about California law and the California Penal Code.
All right.
So, you know, let's set the stage here. California law makes it a crime to sell or give away, You don't need to actually sell property, but give it away in order to avoid having to use that property to pay back a debt. So when someone gives away, sells, or otherwise transfers property with the goal of preventing a creditor from receiving the money that the creditor owes – to pay off a debt, in other words, of the debtor, then that person can be convicted of a white collar crime known as a fraudulent conveyance. And that obviously begs the question of what are some examples of fraudulent conveyance? How can you get stuck with a claim of fraudulent conveyance? Well, the easiest way is to make sure you pay your bills. But other than that, I thought I would give a few examples in a rather short and succinct show today to kind of tell people what they need to look for, and also how you might better protect yourself from ever being in this position in the first place, because this could be rather serious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing to owe money to somebody and transfer property or sell it and not pay your debt. It's another if you intend to defraud the creditor. So part and parcel with this crime, this white collar crime, is you must intend to transfer this property, sell this property, or give away this property with the intent of defrauding the creditor, not paying the creditor. So if you do it and you have good motivations and you just happen to have a problem hanging over your head simultaneously, well, then it's going to be up to the other side to prove that you did it intentionally with the idea of not paying the creditor the money that's owed.
So are you talking about a property that you owe money to this creditor that you're getting rid of for sale?
No. I'm talking about property per se. It could be a piece of land. It could be a money, a bank account. It could be a car. It could be a valuable piece of personal property. You're getting rid of that property because it has value and it has the potential of paying off your creditor if your creditor reaches it, okay? And that means the creditor may try to reach your bank account. The creditor may try to reach your property, whether it be real or personal. And you're trying to move this property in order to avoid satisfying the debt that you owe. Okay, so let's give an example. That's probably the easiest way to do it. And I picked one that's near and dear to my heart. Let's use Joe. I'll call him Joe as example number one. Joe owns a very expensive watch. And Joe, this watch is worth about $10,000, and Joe owes Cindy quite a bit of money, almost as much as the watch is worth. So Joe says, hey, I got to get rid of this because if Cindy makes me sell this watch and pay the debt, I no longer have the watch. So he gives the watch to his sister, we'll call her Sarah, and Sarah and Joe secretly agree that the watch will be given back to Joe once this whole thing is resolved and blows over. Maybe Joe's going to be able to settle this thing with Cindy for a very cheap price, or maybe Joe's going to be able to talk Cindy out of it, or maybe Joe's going to try to threaten Cindy with a lawyer and get her to back away from the debt. Who knows? Could be a number of things. Well, in the example I just gave, Joe may have committed the white-collar crime of fraudulent conveyance because he gave away his property to his sister in order to avoid paying the creditor's debt, which is Cindy's debt that was owed her.
Right. So would this apply then? So I understand the example. I'm a little confused, though, in that if the watch owned in this example, is the watch owned by the business or is this personal property that he's selling?
No. We haven't mentioned the business at all yet. This is just his watch. And that's going to tie into, at the end of the show, why I recommend enticizing, as you might remember one of our first shows, why you need a business entity. It's, you can still get in trouble, but if you do things the right way, you have a better chance of avoiding it. And we'll explain that at the end of the show.
So in this example, we're assuming that we're not enticized.
Well, it doesn't matter whether he is or he isn't. If Joe owes a personal debt, I'm not talking about a business debt. If Joe owes a personal debt and that watch belongs to him and he sells it or transfers it or in some way tries to prevent Cindy from reaching it in order to pay off the money he owes Cindy, that is a fraudulent transfer. Because he knows he owes money to Cindy. He knows he has a valuable piece of property. He is trying to avoid Cindy reaching that property should she get a judgment against him. So he now gives it to Sarah and tells Sarah to give it back to him once this whole thing is blown over. Maybe he ends up paying Cindy anyway, but he just doesn't want her to get the watch to help satisfy the debt. So he's moving the watch so it's not a part of his assets any longer. Okay. Let's take another example. Harold is, we'll call this guy Harold. He's divorced from his ex-wife and we'll call her Ann. So Harold is divorced from Ann. But he owes her a huge chunk of money for child support every month. Typical, right? Happens a lot. Harold knows that if he stops making child support payments, the state will take money right out of his bank account from the small business that he owns. So let's say Harold owns a business, right? Harold arranges for the profits from his business to go instead to the bank account of his girlfriend. What are we going to call her? Well, we'll call her Linda. Okay. So Harold is sending the profits from his company to Linda's account in order to prevent the money from going to Ann. That's a fraud and conveyance. Now, whether if Harold is not enticized, if he doesn't have a business entity like an LLC or a corporation, he's not protected in any way, shape, or form. If he has a business entity, he's not protected if this is a business judgment. If it's a judgment against his business is still going to owe the money to his ex-wife, Ann. Why? Because the profits that he takes from his business is a distribution. It's his income. And once it becomes his income, it's reachable by the state if he doesn't pay his child support. So if he takes the income from his business, even though the divorce in and of itself is not a business transaction, his business income that he takes is now his personal income, his personal property, his own money, right? And now it's reachable by his ex-wife. If he moves that money to his girlfriend's bank account, he's fraudulently transferring his personal property, his money, in order to avoid a debt, child support to his ex-wife. So now if he left that money in his business and didn't take it out as a salary or a distribution, he'd still be liable for paying the child support. Okay. But the question is then, when the state moves against him, will the state be able to force him to pay himself a salary so that that money is going to be used to pay the child support? So this is a situation where if you have a business entity, you're still in some hot water because this doesn't involve a business transaction. And at some point in time, you're going to take a salary or a distribution from your company. And once you do that, that's going to be payable to the ex-wife for child support. And if you don't pay it, then the state's going to come after you and they're going to try to get into your bank account and they're going to try to garnish your wages. And believe me, the state will fight tooth and nail to prove that this company has value and that these wages are due you. I mean, let's face it, you also just can't simply keep money in a business account in order to avoid your debts. You can do it if it's not a fraudulent situation, but now we're talking about a different issue, right? The state may try to prove that he's fraudulently keeping his money in his business in order to avoid a debt. That's a little bit harder of a hill to climb, but if you're fighting the state, you could have a big fight on your hands, and that's going to cost you even more money. So, you know, why not just take the money out and pay the child support? Now, remember, we haven't really talked about people in these two examples who are unable to pay their debt. We're talking about people who are able to pay their debt, but are moving their property fraudulently to somebody else with the intent of avoiding the debt. Okay? You can't get blood from a rock. And if somebody gets a judgment against you and you can't pay it, then eventually they're going to put a lien on your property, or they're going to do something to make sure that when you do get the money, you're going to pay it. These are people that we've talked about in these examples that have the money but are moving it to make it seem like they don't have the money. Okay?
So what do you do in the case when they don't have the money to pay off their debts?
Well, you get a judgment against them, and you hope you can attach some piece of property with that judgment. Get an abstract of judgment and attach the property. So when the property is sold, or when they do come into money, that money is then payable directly to the judgment creditor. That's what you do. You wait. You file your judgment, and then you wait and monitor it and see when you can get the money. Well, let's give one last example. Let's say we'll call this lady Pat. Let's say Pat is a retiree and she's living on Social Security, and now she's having a hard time paying her credit cards. So she's considering filing for bankruptcy. However, her daughter, Joanne, is having a really difficult financial time herself, and she's gotten a job, but she needs a car to get to work. So Pat has this car, and it has value. And if Pat sold this car, she'd be able to pay off her debts. But instead, she gives the car to her daughter, Joanne, so her daughter, Joanne, can go to work and make a living and support her family. That is transferring the car, not with the intent to avoid the debt, but with the intent to help her daughter. So even though she's transferring a piece of property that has value and could pay off her credit cards, she would not be making a fraudulent conveyance because she's not doing it with the intent to avoid the debt. She's doing it with the intent to help her daughter.
Right.
Okay. So these are things that are very important to remember. And I think if you want to sum it up, you might say, if someone owes more money than they can pay or that they want to pay, lenders can come after their most prized possessions, houses, cars, wedding rings, family heirlooms. It can be lawfully tempting for people in that kind of a situation to try to hide those possessions, give them to relatives, or transfer them in some manner in order to avoid the debt. Now, let's pick up on what you asked earlier, Rick. What does this have to do with enticing? Remember, enticing involves a business debt, right? Enticing involves protecting your business and protecting your valuables against a claim by somebody against you. So if you are an LLC owner or an S corporation owner or a C corporation owner, right? Somebody comes after you, they can only go after what's in your business because it was your business who did the transaction with them, not you personally. In these other examples, it was a personal individual doing business with somebody else. Okay, or being financially involved with somebody else in the case of the divorce issue example. So when you have a business entity, your cars and your prized possessions and all of those things I just mentioned are in fact protected against a business claim because your business did the transaction, not you. In the examples we just talked about, your cars and your houses are not protected because it was a claim against the individual who therefore then tried to avoid the debt. Now let's reverse it. Let's say there's a claim against your business and you try to hide business assets in order to avoid the claim against your business. Well, then you're committing a fraudulent conveyance by the business because you're trying to prevent the claim against your business, the claimant or the debtor from the creditor. I'm sorry. You're trying to prevent the creditor from reaching the assets of your business. So you enticize, you get a business entity to protect your personal assets. But if you do something in a personal way outside of the scope of your business entity, then those assets are reachable and you can't commit a fraudulent conveyance. Similarly, if you do something with your business and a claim is lodged against your business, now your cars and possessions and houses can't be reached, but your business assets can. And if you try to move your business assets in order to avoid that business creditor, then you're still committing fraudulent conveyance. Okay, is that clear?
Yeah.
Got that? I hope that's clear for everybody. You get a business entity to protect your personal assets, but your personal assets are not protected if you do something personally, like owe a personal debt on your credit card. Similarly, your business assets are not protected by your business entity, which is what the business entity is designed to protect. They're designed to protect your personal assets, but your business assets are always reachable in a business debtor situation. If you try to avoid a business debt, just like when you tried to avoid an individual debt, and you transfer some of those business assets, then you can be committing the white collar crime of fraudulent conveyance. So when you're a business and you're operating as a business, somebody is going to sue you because of a business claim. All they have to go after is your business assets, unless they can prove fraud or some other way to pierce the corporate veil, as we discussed in other episodes. Mm-hmm. If you're an individual and you commit some sort of creditor fraud, then they're going to come after your personal possessions anyway, and you can't transfer those with the intent to defraud the creditor. So the idea is, whether it's a business debt or a personal debt, you cannot transfer assets, whether they be business or personal, with the intent to avoid that debt. Okay, you can transfer assets if you don't have the intent. But many, many times when it happens with a lawsuit looming or a creditor on your behind coming after you, you know, that's a pretty good measuring stick as to whether you're doing it with the intent to defraud the creditor.
Mm-hmm. So what are the for California, what are the consequences if you are found guilty of this white collar crime?
Well, this is a criminal. This is, could be a criminal law issue. And so I don't have handy at my beck and call all the penalties, but I can tell you it's a crime. You could be put in jail and you could be ordered to pay a fine. What specifically those terms are and what those fines are would probably be have a lot to do with whether you're a first offender or not, how egregious the debt was, and what specific actions you took in order to avoid that debt. All of that will come into play when it comes into evidence. But suffice it to say that the goal here is to avoid a fraudulent transfer. And by transfer, I mean sale, transferring a deed without any exchange of money, giving property away. Remember, giving property away can be considered a fraudulent transfer, a fraudulent. That's why they use the term fraudulent conveyance, because the property is conveyed either by sale, by transfer, or by giving it away. And again, to recap very quickly, if it's a personal debt, they're coming after your personal assets. If it's a business debt, they're coming after your business assets, because your personal assets are protected if you have a business entity like an LLC or a S corporation. But either way, whether it's a business situation or a personal situation, if you're transferring or selling or giving away assets with the intent to prevent the creditor from reaching them, that is a fraudulent conveyance and hence a white collar crime. Okay. So we want to avoid those, folks. In your business, make sure that make sure you are well protected, okay? But by the same token, this is why they have this catch-all, because courts know that people protect themselves. But their courts basically saying, I don't care what you've done. If they prove fraud against you, we're coming after you. The protection, whatever protection you may or may not have, is not going to help you. Because let's face it, even if you're insured, and the insurance policy covers whatever transaction you may be talking about, you find me an insurance policy that's going to cover an intentional act like fraud. There isn't one. There just ain't one out there, folks. So no insurance is going to protect you either.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like just stay out of the situation, pay your debts, and make sure you're anthracized, right?
Make sure you have a business entity and that you do business with that entity. So your personal assets are protected, and whatever assets they do have access to, should they get a judgment against you, will be business assets only. And then make sure you have an asset protection plan in place long before you ever have any problems. Asset protection is designed to be instituted at a step-by-step level. You take certain steps to protect your assets over the course of a few years, so you're completely protected when that lawsuit comes your way, should it come your way. That way, you have no issue of fraudulent transfer because they can't say that you had the intent. They can't imply by circumstantial evidence that you had the intent to fraudulently transfer property. You've already had it transferred and in place where you want it to be prior to any action with any creditor coming your way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, great. Well, that was a great episode. Short and sweet. And, you know, this is obviously this is in Bill's wheelhouse. So if you have any questions, please direct them directly to Bill. His contact information is right here below this video. But in the meantime, for our audio listeners out there, Bill, what's the best way to get a hold of you should they want to connect?
Well, the email is bill@wfblegalconsulting.com. I'm sorry, bill@wfblegalconsulting.com. I was thinking of another email address that I had. And, of course, the phone numbers, both 949 area code, 413-6535 and 698-6222.
Very good. Well, we'll excuse it this time, Bill. I think there's a little remnants of island fever running through your mind yet, but we'll excuse it this time. So thank you again for your expertise.
Well, you know, when you have as many emails as I do, I don't think island fever plays a part, but that's a good issue to bring up because maybe I need to pare those down a little bit, but I have them for different reasons. And that's one of the things I surely should take a look at. In any event, I hope everyone has been guided in the right direction by this. The show is not meant to imply that we have a lot of people out there trying to do this, but before you know it, you get caught up in this stuff and you start doing things with, and you don't even realize that you're doing it. You have a problem arise and you have something that you really love and is valuable to you, and you try to do something about it. Compare that to the big defrauders out there who really do it intentionally. But remember, you just need to have the intent to transfer this property, and somebody can come along and say that you did it with the intent to defraud. And before you know it, it can be proven that you did do it with the intent to defraud. You wouldn't have given away that watch or that car or that house but for this creditor coming after you. So it's not as difficult as it might seem to establish that. So in any event, I hope everybody has gotten something out of the show. Rick, we'll see everybody next week. I urge everybody to call in if they want or join the show in some way or send in questions or do anything they want to participate, because we're here to help your business grow and to protect your business. We do this for free and we love doing it. So feel free to participate, everybody.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it any better. So, Bill, thanks again for the episode this week. The information is extremely valuable to us business owners out there. So with that, we'll sign off. Everyone, we'll see you again next week, next Tuesday at 10 a.m. here on the Bottle Business Sense Show. So until then, have a great and prosperous week.
Take care, everybody.